Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey everybody, welcome to Redacted on this Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we try to navigate this crazy clown world together and find out what is going on in the world with all of the propaganda that is heaped on us on a regular basis. We are not controlled by any big pharmaceutical company or any country. We are independent journalists, so thank you guys so much for dialing us up and joining us here. We've got a busy show for you. We're going to have a look at what is actually happening on the ground inside of Israel. You know, this is a story that's not being covered by any major Western media coverage in the news at all. We hear what's going on in college campuses, of course, and we hear what's happening in Rafah a little bit. But what is actually happening to Netanyahu and his government, which is teetering on the brink of collapse? We're going to talk about that tonight.
Plus, why are your elected representatives dishing out protection for Israel? In fact, making laws to protect Israel. Aren't they supposed to be working for you?
No.
Working for the American public? If they worked as hard for you as they do for Israel, well, we'd have a whole different society. We're going to look at all of the ways that elected U.S. representatives are protecting Israel with legislation. It's so weird. It's not just the anti-Semitism law. There's a whole lot more than that. Plus, we're going to talk about the FBI's hiring practices. Congress is now investigating whether or not they've lowered standards in order to meet President Biden's diversity quotas. That does exactly seem what's happened. So we're going to look at that.
Also, whistleblowers come forward on this Russian disinformation. Remember all of the hard work that Democrats were doing to try to, you know, create the Steele dossier and using Hamilton 68, which was the dashboard that basically allowed them to upload fake and misleading information to try to discredit candidates. You know, it was working in lockstep with the Biden administration. Tonight, we're going to look at this whistleblower and the new investigative journalism that has uncovered some major, major connections in all of that. So we'll do all of that tonight on the show. But first, let us know where you're joining us from around the world. We love seeing you guys. Thanks to the tens of thousands of you watching right now on Rumble, on YouTube, and on X. Nice to see all of you guys. Let us know. Ace99 is joining us. Van Bastos is in London tonight. Let's see. What else do we have here? We've got a lot of folks joining us from around the world. We have family in town visiting. And
yes.
Our grandfather to our 11-year-old. Our little daughter is going to be turning 12 tomorrow, so this is her night.
Yeah, exactly. She, right.
It's hilarious. I just was down there a second ago. She's trying to teach him how to play Fortnite.
Yeah,
which is
it's going about how you'd expect it.
Right,
a 12-year-old teaching Papa how to play Fortnite.
But he's got to learn it. The doctor said the doctor told him, you know, as he's getting older, you gotta play video games.
Yes, that's exactly.
Like, you know, it really improves cognition and all that. So
right.
Anyway.
I want to say I was reading some comments on the segment we did yesterday about the beer keg rager for a conservative beer company.
Yeah.
I had many comments saying that I was being a hypocrite because I was in college once too. I didn't drink or go to parties in college. I just wanted to let you know that I was not hypocritical. I was lame.
Right.
That probably explains a lot.
She was not hypocritical. She was not hip.
No. Yeah.
But lame.
I'm right there with you, though, Natalie, because I was 24 when I first went to college, and I didn't party at all. I was all out of my system by then. So then all I did was study. I just focused on my studies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't party at all.
I was not cool. I didn't do that. So you could take that hypocritical and shove it, because I'm a nerd and a Poindexter. You got to know who you're dealing with here.
Exactly. All right. So tonight we got a lot of news to get to tonight. And I noticed the title is odd. I noticed the title in our live stream is from last night, but that's weird.
Yeah, I was wondering about
why is that
myself.
Oh wait,
just update it to
the right one.
We are, but the title is from last night's show.
I'm give me sure a second.
Okay.
Okay.
While you do that, you want us to move on, or you?
Let's give him a second.
Okay.
Do you notice my earrings are bees? While we're doing that, they're bees. Yeah,
great.
Because I have a reputation for wearing bee shirts. We're going to get to the news in a second. You don't have to like the earrings at all.
Just let us know when we're good to go. And we'll say hi to everyone in the chat, I guess, while we're waiting here.
Yeah. You Only Live Once from Ohio. Thanks for joining us.
Old title. Old title. That's, yeah, exactly. It was last night's title.
All right, I fixed it. We had some issues with the remote server when we were setting up, so it was a bit of a scramble, so apparently that is...
Okay. Did we keep our live, our same live stream and same live audience? Yeah.
Yep, I just swapped out the title.
Okay. Here we are. Thank you for joining us. We're not going to talk about Putin tonight.
We are.
Oh.
Pay attention. Keep up. Keep up, will you? All right, let's get into our news.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about this.
We're going to start by talking about
Putin. Yes, let's do it. Let's do it.
I meant that.
We're going to start by talking about Putin tonight in our little news roundup here. So Putin inaugurated today to a fifth term. Put his hand on the Bible and the Constitution of Russia sworn in today, but not before he sent a message to the West. You better back the F up or we are going to destroy you. Like, this was his inauguration message to the West. He's not mincing words. Watch.
Important, very important words for those who might be tempted to interfere in what is happening. Whoever tries to interfere with us, and even more so to create threats to our country, to our people, should know that Russia's response will be immediate and lead you to consequences that you have never faced before in your history. We are prepared for any development of events. All decisions necessary in this regard have been taken. I hope that I will be heard.
Do you need him to be any more direct?
That's a party.
French President Macron appeared to get the message, sending a message that France, we don't want a war with Russia. Actually want peace. Not going to send troops. That was all a bluff. I'm going to go back, have a croissant back in France.
Meanwhile, in Germany, they officially shut down freedom of speech because apparently you're not allowed to talk about how illegal immigrants are making life less safe, specifically with rape and murder rates. Just like they are across all of Europe, in Germany, you have to pretend that that's not happening because a politician from the AfD party, Marie-Therese Kaiser, was just convicted and fined 6,000 euros for tweeting the government's own stats that do, in fact, show that an overwhelming number of rapes are coming from Afghani immigrants and other countries. Now, almost no rapes are being carried out from Germans themselves, it would seem. Again, these are Germany's own statistics, but she was convicted and fined for publishing this data because the law is in Germany that you cannot make generalizations. You can't make generalizations. That's a law.
Statistics aren't a generalization.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, here are the stats. Here's the government's own stats.
And because she gets the convicted. Way she said it implied that all Afghanis are rapists. Clearly, that's not true. But she said the majority of rapists are Afghani immigrants. And that was offensive. Now, what is so interesting is that the judge in this case said freedom of speech ends at human dignity, which means you don't have freedom of speech at all. Now, again, I'm not defending the spirit at which this was put across, but you can't make generalizations. Yeah. That's a law. So this is wild that there is this. Okay, there should not be a brick wall in freedom of speech. You don't get to decide, then you don't have free speech.
Meanwhile, in Ukraine, Ukrainian men are protesting all across Europe. They don't want to be sent back to Zelensky's meat grinder. They've sought sanctuary in European countries, of course, since the outbreak of the war, like in Ireland and Poland. But those countries are sending them back right to the front lines. Now protests are rolling out. This one was in Dublin. And these are Ukrainian men saying, I am not cannon fodder. Ukraine, stop torturing men. Ukraine is no longer a democracy. Freedom for Ukrainian men. Human rights for all, their signs read. And this comes at a moment in Ireland when there was massive protests against illegal immigration today as well. Meanwhile, and, you know, this is amazing because Ukrainian authorities, remember you've seen all of those videos of people being thrown into buses by the conscription guys in Ukraine. They come around. The New York Times called them people snatchers, like these guys. They'll just come grab men off the street and throw them into vans and then take them to the front lines to die, basically. Well, now Ukraine has figured out a way to stop this from happening, but not actually stop the body snatching. No, in fact, they're now making it illegal for you to film them doing it. You'll be thrown in jail between 5 and 8 years for, quote, filming their work. So you're not allowed to film these guys, the people snatchers in Ukraine anymore, and then post these videos on social media. So Ukraine has decreed this. This is a new law. You'll be thrown in jail for 5 to 8 years in prison if you do this.
Meanwhile, just today, 6 people drowned trying to escape Ukraine by way of the sea because they are so terrified of the conscription laws that they literally just tried to swim away. This has been happening in increasing numbers, so dozens of people have died trying to get the heck out of there because they do not want to be used as bait for Zelensky's war. It's terrible.
Yeah.
He is a demon.
He is a demon. And as Colonel McGregor was tweeting today, it looks like Zelensky is not long for this world. We will see whether or not he is in power for the next week or so.
Well,
go ahead.
There was just an assassination attempt that was foiled by 2 of his ministers.
Exactly. Yeah.
I just read that right before the show.
Yeah. And so that was, they say it was foiled. I mean, where did it come from? Is it CIA? It's like, okay, you've used up your usefulness
now. An attempt
now?
On whose life?
Zelensky.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
So again, who is it? Is it people surrounding him? The CIA has like, all right, you've used up your usefulness. We got a good few years out of you, but you know, you're done now.
Ever heard of Alexei Navalny or Saddam Hussein? Because you're headed that way, buddy.
Well, friend of the show, Larry Johnson, former CIA agent, had said that this was going to happen. He said this months ago. In fact, we should get Larry on the show. I'll call Larry. We'll have him on the show. We'll talk about this tomorrow on the show. Okay, we got a lot more news to get to. We're going to look at Benjamin Netanyahu in just a moment. And is he finished in Israel? Like, this is a story that needs coverage. We'll get there in a second.
But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Shopify, because this is a great way for you to grow your business, launch yourself to the world, let the world know what it is you have to sell or show or offer services, whatever it is, you can create it at shopify.com/redacted, because you have an idea, you know you need a website, but you don't know how to do it. Well, Shopify will help you do it. They have everything you need to grow your business. In fact, the Redacted store does run on Shopify because, you know, it's easy to use. They help us out. We're able to put all of our products up at redactedstore.com. So Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you with every stage of your business, whether you're delivering daily digests or serving sensational scoops. Shopify will help you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and their in-person POS sale. Wherever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. So right now, head on over to sign up for a $1 per month trial period. You got nothing to lose except $1. Give it a try. Go to shopify.com/redacted. One more time, that's shopify.com/redacted.
Well, the corporate media, of course, is covering the protests on college campuses across the United States. Some of them are covering the Israeli bombing of Rafah overnight and the slaughtering of civilians, but almost none of them, I can't find any American corporate media that is covering the hundreds of thousands of Israelis who are pouring onto the streets of Tel Aviv to protest Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, calling for his removal from power, and they're calling for a ceasefire. This is Israel. This is Tel Aviv. Journalist Dan Cohen is probably the only one covering this. He tweeted this a short time ago. If Israel agrees to the ceasefire, then Ben-Gvir and Smotrich will collapse, the Netanyahu government, and unprecedented upheaval in Israeli society will begin. Israel's gigantic internal rift, temporarily papered over by the trauma of October 7th and the war on Gaza, will exacerbate to new levels, potentially collapsing the state of Israel. So it appears that Dan, as one of the only Western media journalists actually covering this story, and Dan Cohen joins us now from Uncaptured Media. Dan, great to see you. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Clayton.
So it appears, Dan, that the media in the West doesn't want us to see these massive protests in Tel Aviv against Netanyahu. I mean, let's start there. No coverage of this. I turn on Lester Holt on the NBC Nightly News. You turn on the CBS. There's no coverage of the tens of thousands of people that are protesting Netanyahu in his own country.
Yeah, there's a massive internal divide in Israeli society that is basically ignored in the Western media. Nobody wants to talk about it. And I mean, that divide existed even before the events of October 7th, before this horrific war on Gaza. Last summer, in the summer of 2023, there were massive protests largely by the same sort of class of people, liberals from Tel Aviv and that area, who were protesting against the judicial, what they called the judicial coup, the basically neutering of the Supreme Court in Israel and handing of basically all power to the Knesset. And the Times of Israel reported, I believe, that 28% of Israelis were considering leaving the country permanently. So it was already,
wow,
the government was, the whole state of Israel, the Zionist project, was in a state of crisis before October 7th. And that speaks to the divide between the kind of Zionist left, if we can call it that, and the Zionist right. The Zionist left that wants to have sort of real politic and maybe a sort of permanent occupation and manage the conflict, and the Zionist right, which is more powerful, that wants genocide, ethnic cleansing of all the Palestinians, get rid of all of them. And that has been existing, wants basically a total theocracy. Now, October 7th just poured a huge amount of gas on that fire. It basically upended the entire paradigm because, you know, the whole idea of we can permanently occupy these people was discredited. Now, you could say it's discredited from a, you know, human perspective and say, well, you can't do that. Not only is it's wrong to do, but it's also not going to work. Or you can say the right-wing perspective, you can take the right-wing Zionist perspective and say, well, you can't do that because you have your enemies just on the other side of that line, and they're going to plot to try to kill you, which is also true in a sense. So the kind of centrist big lie has totally been discredited. And I think that's really what's at the heart of what's going on here.
So this giant internal rift, as you point out, papered over temporarily by October 7th, this rallying around of, you know, so everyone raising the Israeli flag, of course, and the atrocities that we saw that day, and then the rallying of support to go after Hamas and end this once and for all. Now we're starting to see the rift once again. You say that the Netanyahu government will likely collapse if this ceasefire moves forward. Can you explain why? Why, if Netanyahu gives in, I guess, to the ceasefire agreement, which is now it seems like it's in place, however, Rafah is still being bombed, we can talk about that, that Netanyahu will be thrown out, and this is the collapse of his government?
Well, as soon as the news was reported from Al Jazeera that Hamas had accepted the ceasefire proposal that was brokered by the Qataris and Egyptians, and apparently with knowledge of the United States, of course, then the onus is on Israel. What is Netanyahu going to do? And the Netanyahu war cabinet was scheduled to meet. But even before that, they started bombing Rafah. So their answer was very clear, even though it hasn't even been, I don't think, officially rejected. It's obvious the Israelis invaded. They took over the Rafah crossing. So that, you know, the actions are make it completely clear. And I don't think Netanyahu at any point will be willing to agree to a ceasefire, because if he does, well, what will happen? Itamar Ben-Gvir, the national security minister, and Bezalel Smotrich, the finance minister, have said they will pull out of the government and it will collapse his cabinet. So then Israel goes to elections. Who knows what kind of government comes out of that? But really what happens then is the big lie that Israel can defeat Hamas and get the captives back is all exposed. I mean, since the beginning, Netanyahu has put out two contradictory goals. One, defeat Hamas. It's never been able to do that. It can kill a lot of civilians. It can drop a lot of bombs. It can cause all kinds of atrocities. But Hamas has the trump card in the tunnels. And it's been planning this for years and years and years, knowing exactly what Israeli capabilities are. And on the other side, Israel says, we're going to use military force to get the captives back. Those are two totally contradictory goals. And he's basically speaking out of both sides of his mouth to the kind of two main camps of Israeli society, lying to both of them. So if he agrees to a ceasefire, Itamar Ben-Gvir pulls out, Bezalel Smotrich pulls out, then the big lie is exposed, and the Israelis who want the captives back, who are demonstrating in the streets, they're gonna be after him. And then his base of support, that he has rode to prominence, and he rode to prominence in the 90s, the settler movement and religious Zionism, and that has kept him in power most of the time since the mid 90s, for what, you know, most of 30 years. They are going to be after his head too, because they're going to say, you were supposed to exterminate Gaza. We were supposed to wipe all those people out, expel them into Egypt, whatever other countries, and build settlements there. And you lied. So first you have Netanyahu, who has his corruption scandals. He's facing indictments that's all on pause as long as the war goes on. And then so that's one level of it. Then you have basically the big lie of Zionism providing security, of the whole Netanyahu paradigm of, you know, we're going to keep Gaza down, we're going to permanently occupy them, same with the West Bank, and that will work, and that will just work forever. But obviously it does not. You cannot keep your boot on someone's neck permanently, especially as, you know, you become complacent and you privatize different parts of the military and you want it to be a smart military. And eventually that person who you are keeping down is going to figure out your weakness and is going to make a big move to attack you and change the situation. And that's what happened on October 7th. And as soon as that truth becomes clear to enough of the Israeli public, then Netanyahu is finished. So he will never agree to a ceasefire, as I see it.
I mean, it seems right? Why would he agree to a ceasefire? The war gives him cover, right? He's allowed to use sort of war powers, the indictments that are against him, the criminality, the criminal indictments that are basically held in status. It's like, you know, we'll go after you legally once this war is done. He's like, well, great, well, I'm going to keep the war going. I mean, even if Gaza is ethnically cleansed and pushed out, I've seen, of course, analysts pointing to the fact that, well, Lebanon would be next, right? I mean, this is not just an end to it in Gaza. This would be continued on, so Netanyahu remains in some sort of power, right?
Yeah, and I think that's where we could see really the split, because obviously Netanyahu and Israel, broadly speaking, is completely dependent on the United States for military support, for diplomatic and political support. And, you know, Netanyahu has said, okay, Hamas's command and control center is under Al-Shifa Hospital, and they attacked Al-Shifa and committed atrocities there. It wasn't there. They said, Hamas is under Khan Yunis. They went to Khan Yunis. Hamas wasn't, you know, they couldn't do anything there. Oh, now they say they're under Rafah. So it's basically the last place in Gaza that they can claim that they've, you know, we've conquered the other areas, even though they haven't actually defeated Hamas as a military command structure in any of those places. The command structure, and I'm not talking about a guerrilla resistance of all disparate cells. I'm talking about where in one part of Gaza, the leadership can give an order for another, for militants in another part to carry out an attack, an operation. They can guide it and tell them exactly what to do. That all still stands. So once Israel has, you know, finished with its lies in Rafah, then what's next? As you said, it's Hezbollah in Lebanon. And the U.S., the Biden administration, and I think the Pentagon overall, regardless of who's president, does not want to get into a war with Hezbollah, because that means war with Iran. And when Israel attacked Iranian embassy in Damascus a few weeks ago, and then Iran attacked, had a counterattack, the Biden administration told Israel, take the victory. You got to attack them back again. But we're not going to enter into a war. We're not going to support strikes on Lebanon. We're not going to do that. So that, I think, that's where we start to see a little bit of daylight between the Israeli and the U.S. positions. And as Israel inevitably, again, attempts to escalate on that front, which, you know, its leadership sees as an inevitability, and its think tanks, they all say, you know, Hezbollah has to be wiped out. I mean, how can you, according to their logic, how can you have this military force right on the other side of that border that wants to, you know, that rejects you? How can you let them exist? So when that escalates again, I think you're going to see more and more daylight between the U.S. and Israeli positions. And that's where, you know, there's a possibility of somehow Israel being forced to accept a ceasefire, some kind of change in the U.S.-Israeli relationship, because that is what is making all of this possible.
Yeah. So then all of the Palestinians in Rafah wiped out and killed. So they have nothing else to say that they're here now in Rafah. So they clean out totally. Then they move on to Hezbollah. And then, of course, then it becomes war with Iran, and the United States will say, okay, either, you know, you have Senator Lindsey Graham, of course, who would love to do that, would love to go to war with Iran. You have a bunch of neocons that would love to do that. But I think the cooler heads might hopefully prevail, because we would lose a war with Iran very clearly. This is unbelievable where this is all heading. I mean, I have friends and sources in Tel Aviv, downtown Tel Aviv, sending me videos from their buildings, like looking at the tens of thousands of people on the streets down below, telling us Netanyahu is finished. But again, the Western media won't cover this story at all. Dan Cohen from Uncaptured Media. I encourage all of you to check out his great reporting. Follow him on X. He is one of the clearest, most sensible voices on what's happening there right now. Dan, great to see you.
Great to see you, Blaine.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. And we should go ahead.
He did a great job with that. I'm so glad for his explanation and his context on that.
Yeah, I mean, he spent so much time in Gaza. Like, you know, for naysayers out there, they're like, oh, you know, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Have you been to Gaza? Do you understand the context of this? Have you spent your life researching this?
Right.
So, yes. And as Meow Scenari says, this is why I love Redacted. Can't find any news like this on mainstream media. Love the other takes on this war. So thank you for that as well. Yeah, there's going to be people that disagree with that. But if you, I just want to say this, we try to be at least a thinking person's show. So if you have a different opinion of it, like your opinions are valid, but please use facts. So if there's something that Dan said that you disagree with, or that we said that you disagree with, please always be specific. Don't just say, I don't believe that, or, you know, just please
or
be
attack
specific.
Personally, because those, we can't respond that. We can't respond to that.
I mean, I don't care about being.
But it's so much easier just to. It's so much easier just to shout things.
It is
so much easier that way.
Like Johnny Quest says, "Redacted is poop." Like that's a good.
Oh, but we got four poo emojis. So I think that's.
My kids would actually appreciate that. Be like, "Daddy, you got a poop emoji."
Four of them.
Four of them.
Well, there's one for each of us. David's not here right now, but.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
You know, they always say when you're getting criticized like this that you know you're over the target. Mm-hmm. When you're getting criticized by trolls, you're over the target.
I'll rebut the poop later. I'll think about
we'll
that.
Dive into the poop later. All right. We have got more news to get to here on your Tuesday. We're going to talk about why Congress continues to protect Israel. Well, we know, right? I mean, how many of them are taking money from Israel? By the way, we are a show that doesn't take money from any of these people, and we are not bought and sold by any of these governments. And we also don't take money from the pharmaceutical industry, the biopharmaceutical complex, or governments. We don't take any money from AIPAC. We don't take any money from lobbyists. We don't do any of that stuff. So we have a few sponsors on our show that support us, and that's about it. So,
well, we'll tell you about one. We're going to tell you about Genucel because we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk more about Israel in a second because they sponsor our show. They do not ever tell us what to say. So if you'd like to support us, you can support them. And they have a Mother's Day sale coming up. It's the most popular package for 70% off if you go to genucel.com/redacted. So, I mean, who doesn't want skincare for your birthday or Mother's Day? If you're a lady, you like this kind of thing. Even my daughter, she's having her 12th birthday tomorrow. And my nephew says, do you want lotions for your birthday? Because I'd be pretty upset. And she's like, yes, I do. It starts young. That's exactly what she wants is face creams and lotions.
He's like, I want a soccer ball and soccer cleats. She's
and
like,
she's
I want
like,
lotion.
Yes, I want all these lotions and soaps.
She's a girl.
We love this stuff. So right now you can get 25% off their already awesome Mother's Day sale prices, making this Mother's Day sale Genucel's biggest and best ever. You know, treat yourself with some luxurious face cream. Get rid of those wrinkles or those that dry skin. That's a great way to start off your springtime. It takes out under eye bags. There's a buffet of products that will help you feel special, youthful, and vibrant, and not dry, which is the opposite of what you want going into the hot summer months. So check out their 70% off plus an extra 25% off anniversary discount on top of top-selling packages during the Mother's Day sale for Genucel. Once this sale is gone, it's gone. So order yours right now and also get the jawline treatment for a more contoured, defined jawline. So you can only get it at genucel.com/redacted. Get your free spa box and two bonus gifts and free shipping. Once again, that's genucel.com/redacted.
Oh, I like these emojis. So redacted is the goat. I like that.
Goat emoji?
I'll take that. I'll put that up there. Thank you. It's Lizzie. I'll put that up there.
I'll take it.
So real quick. You were talking about, was it Eve?
Ava.
Yeah. Sorry.
The middle one.
I don't get them confused. I get the names confused. But so my daughter has OCD, and she, like, one of the things is, like, she feels like her hands are always dry.
Yes,
so
me
I've
too.
Got probably 60, I've got like 60, 70 bottles of lotion just everywhere. Like, there's so much lotion, like, in this
house.
Girls
like that.
Too much almost.
I think I must have been in a past life like an Egyptian stone worker, because I always feel like, do I have dry hands? I can't stand it. It's like one of my biggest fears is dry hands. So I always have lotion stacked around the house. So yes, I'm with you, Adelaide, just like that. All right. Why are U.S. lawmakers so busy making laws and running errands to make Israel great? Why is that when their job is to be elected to represent the American people? It's very perplexing. Now think about it. You elect a senator. They should be busy with things that matter, making your state better. But why instead are they so worried about who does business with Israel, who threatens Israel? Why are they making legislation that you can't even talk bad about Israel? It's so weird, right? This is just a short list of all of the things that your elected U.S. lawmakers are doing, and in my opinion, the most egregious acts of Israel pimping. They were not elected to do this. How is this in your best interest? So first of all, just this week, within the last few days, they threatened the International Criminal Court over threats to Israeli leaders. That one's rich. They passed anti-Semitism acts. They block UN peace resolutions like it's a full-time job, and they kill off peaceful resistance movements like the BDS movement. Could this be perhaps because only 7 elected representatives in U.S. Congress do not take money from the Israeli lobby?
Could that be it?
Is it really like the simplest answer is the answer?
Just follow the money. Isn't it always the case, right? I mean, exactly what we were talking about in Israel about the destruction of Gaza. Just follow the money. They want to turn it into an oil port. I mean, the $500 billion, $600 billion of oil and natural gas that are sitting right there, oil, the United States and Israel will, of course, reap the benefits of that. So you've got to kill all the Palestinians. You've got to move them all out of there, right? You can't have them there. So yes, follow the money.
So I thought today we'd go over a little review of everything your lawmaker is doing to protect Israel so much, and then think about 2 things. 1, how you don't feel protected in your own home state. And 2, how the U.S. absolutely wants every country to hurt Russia in one way or another, but they're busy playing defense against harm against Israel. So here's case in point. A group of 12 senators sent this letter to the International Criminal Court threatening severe sanctions if the court follows through with the requests to arrest Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and other Israeli officials for their violations of international rules of war. Now, what's hilarious about this, hilarious so much I did laugh out loud, is that the U.S. is not a member of the International Criminal Court, neither is Israel. They both have avoided that on purpose because they don't want to be held accountable for their own war crimes. So they literally decided not to join, but they are comfortable sending nasty grams like this with a straight face. Look at what this letter says. It says, Israel's issuing arrest warrants for the leaders of Israel would not only be unjustified, but would expose your organization's hypocrisy and double standard because you haven't done this for the Ayatollah in Iran or President Bashar al-Assad in Syria or any Hamas leaders or Chinese President Xi Jinping. They don't say why he should be, arrested, but they just say, we don't like these guys and you haven't done that. And so, if you issue a warrant for the arrest of Israeli leadership, we will interpret this not only as a threat to Israel's sovereignty, but to the sovereignty of the United States. Do you think that if you're an American citizen, that threatening Israel threatens you? Do you want your elected representatives doing this? They say, we will not tolerate this. Target Israel. Look at this strong language. target Israel and we will target you. If you move forward with the measures indicated in this report, we will move to end all American support for the ICC, which is what exactly?
Yeah, what sort of support do we even give them in the first place?
We don't. We're not a member.
We purposefully turn our nose up at the International Criminal Court because we carry out war crimes on a regular basis. We are illegally illegally occupying Niger. We've been told to move, and we did not remove our forces. We are illegally occupying Yemen and Sudan and Syria. All war crimes. We carry out war crimes against civilians on a regular basis. This is why we are not allowed to. We don't want to join the International Criminal Court because we will be held to account.
Right, but then this letter, it ends with, you have been warned. Okay, who's shaking in their boots because of that? How the heck do you sanction an international governing body that you are not a member of?
You guys,
Ted Cruz.
You guys couldn't even impeach Mayorkas, for crying out loud. You're going to send a strongly worded letter to the International Criminal Court threatening them? You couldn't even impeach Mayorkas?
It's just to impress your girlfriend Israel. That's literally the only reason to do this. The ICC responded with this post on X saying, thanks, but we're not going to be intimidated. That's basically what this says. You can look it up for yourself. Now, if these are your senators who wrote this nasty gram, I would be very tempted to tell them to knock this off and please govern their own state. So if you see your senator there, do with this what you will.
Can I read them off? Tom,
sure.
Tom Cotton, Marsha Blackburn, Ted Budd, Ted Cruz, Pete Ricketts, Rick Scott, Tim Scott, Marco Rubio, Bill Hagerty, Kevin Cramer, Katie Britt, Mitch McConnell. Not surprising to see these names on that
They're
list.
They're so busy saying, back off our girl Israel. Back off.
Mitch McConnell, of course.
Okay. Now, in addition to this, U.S. lawmakers last week passed the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. It defers to the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, we're going to call them the IHRA, to define anti-Semitism, and then says if you do any of those things, you will not get federal funding for your school or your program or whatever the heck it is. Now, as Clayton said yesterday, it basically destroys the entire meaning of anti-Semitism, and it is affront to free speech. It defines anti-Semitism as any criticism of Israel and any generalization about Jewish people, or even, this is interesting, take a look at this, even true mentions of some of the more powerful media or government positions. It says, accusing Jews as a people of being responsible for real or imagined wrongdoing. So even real things you can't say, because that would be anti-Semitism. You also cannot make mendacious, dehumanizing, demonetizing, or stereotypical allegations about Jews, such as having power or media or economic positions of power. So the bill does nothing other than police speech. Threatening or harming Jewish people was already illegal. So why are lawmakers doing this? Again, is it to impress their girlfriend Israel? It's certainly not for you. I don't think the American people get much out of it. As for blocking peace resolutions in the United Nations, the U.S. has done this so many times, too many to count this year. You can look them up yourself. But lest you think that this Israel bidding is new to U.S. lawmakers, I'd like to go over what happened when pro-Palestinian groups tried peaceful resistance against Israel with the BDS movement, and U.S. lawmakers tried to make that illegal. So the BDS movement was a peaceful protest asking companies and people to divest themselves of Israel while the Palestinians still did not have power or were still being occupied or mistreated by the Israeli government. That's peaceful resistance, right? Lawmakers in the U.S. literally wrote legislation saying that it's illegal to boycott Israel. That's wild that they even did that. Why can't you? Isn't it your right to not like Israel or like them if you want? Here's the legislation, the Combating BDS Act of 2019. This never did get passed into law, but it was passed in at least one house of government. The BDS, again, was a grassroots movement asking companies not to do business with Israel because of the way they treated the Palestinians. It was a response to the violence from the Second Intifada, where Palestinians realized they did not want a global reputation for violence. They had to respond in a nonviolent way in order to inspire action on their behalf. Their list of grievances was quite reasonable. I took this list from Mark Lamont Hill and Mitchell Plitnik's book called Except for Palestine. They wanted Israel's construction of the wall in the West Bank, as well as beyond its internationally recognized borders. They wanted to, these were their grievances, actually. They don't want these things. They don't want them. Sorry. Their grievance was continued expansion of Jewish-only settlements in the West Bank, unilateral annexation of East Jerusalem and the Golan Heights, and the deep concern over political annexation of large parts or even all of the West Bank, the growing global Palestinian refugee problem, and Israel's discrimination against its own Arab, largely Palestinian citizens. So this was, does this seem like anti-Semitic to you? Because that's how lawmakers presented it, that boycotting Israel was anti-Semitic. Even looking at this list of grievance was anti-Semitic. Now, at first, Zionists ignored the BDS and the media did too, but they only covered violent Palestinian resistance, not nonviolent Palestinian resistance. Why do you think that is? Why did the media do that? Not really give any credence to a nonviolent resistance movement. Until it started to gain traction. And then, again, lawmakers went into action in order to stop it in its tracks. You may remember this. Ben and Jerry's joined the BDS movement, and lawmakers went after them like they were Elon Musk. Their parent company, Unilever, sold them, which is probably just as well because Unilever allows rapes in Africa. I refer you to that segment we did last year. Please look for it. Airbnb said, okay, well, we don't want to list homes and profit off of homes in the West Bank because of the BDS movement. They reversed that decision because they were sued and later said, okay, we'll list homes in the West Bank that were stolen from Palestinians. You still can Airbnb it. Why didn't we think to do that, honey? If you go on a vacation on an Airbnb in the West Bank that was stolen, that would be fun.
Oh, this house was stolen? Yeah. And it's in the write-up, in the Airbnb write-up.
Yeah. Like,
this house was illegally stolen from...
from a Palestinian.
Yeah.
Has a nice garden. Is there a search filter for that? Can you search filter for that?
So you can actually still get these houses, but Airbnb says they won't profit from it. They will donate the profits that they make. So the owners can still make their money, but whatever piece of that goes to Airbnb will be donated towards the BDS. Now, I know I'm always speaking out against stakeholder capitalism, and the BDS movement is definitely an example of businesses doing politics, which I'm generally against, but I am for their right to do it. I think they should have a right to say we don't want to do business with Israel. And that is, in fact, what lawmakers wanted to make illegal, to not do business with Israel. And in fact, the courts decided it is their right. And if they revoked their right to participate in the BDS movement, that would be a violation of their freedom of speech and their First Amendment rights. So this went to the courts, and the courts sided with BDS that companies still do have. So why do U.S. lawmakers try to make it illegal not to do business with Israel? And why did they take a peaceful protest and shut it down? At best, they're playing bully for their bud Israel. But at worst, they shut down a peaceful protest. And then what did we get? A violent one on October 7th. So you see what I'm saying here?
Right.
Is it in anybody's interest?
No. It never is. It never is. I mean, all you need to do is read Ilan Pappe's Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. All you need to do is read The Israel Lobby by John Mearsheimer. Read some books. And the entire point of the Israel Lobby book by John Mearsheimer is that never has it helped the United States to be involved in any of this. It has actually hurt the United States. So when you're like, someone in the chat just said, I love your show, but I hate when you go on an anti-Israel rant. It's like, this isn't anti-Israel. It's actually not. It's anti-Congress kissing up to Israel and at the detriment of the United States. That's what this is a rant about. So
it's about, why do someone I elect do this for Israel? No one asked what constituents want this. Hey, you know, I'm so glad that you solved this problem of like not clean water in Michigan. But also, let's think about who's boycotting Israel, because that's a real concern for the residents of Michigan or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, why don't we have similar legislation for Luxembourg or for, you know, like...
Right. Because Luxembourg...
Or Russia. Like, why can't we make laws against boycotting Russia?
Yeah, because you're not making money off of them. And so once you understand how the Israel lobby works, and you understand, as Netanyahu has talked about openly, that they have all these American politicians in his back pocket, and that Israel controls America, those are their words, not ours. Like, why would you be upset about that rant? I mean, are you more pro-Israel than you are America? I just don't understand that sentiment. I don't get that.
Okay, and I'm confused. Who, raise your hand, who wants their elected representatives to make laws protecting Israel? Who in any Western country wants that, and why? Just tell me, because I can't compute it. So let me know what you think.
We'll start a poll in the chat. We can't do a poll on the Rumble chat for some reason yet. Hopefully Rumble's working on that, but we'll put it up on our YouTube chat. Should U.S. politicians, what's a good way to phrase that? Should U.S. Politicians...
Well, I mean, I don't know how to generalize. Like, this ICC letter is so absurd. What is it they're doing? Should they run defense? Should they create? Should they spend their time protecting Israel?
Should U.S. politicians spend
they're spending not only their time, but your tax dollars and writing legislation? I'm not sure how we're going to title this segment.
All right. Well, I'm just trying to do a poll. Doing? Just give me a poll. I just want a poll title. Should U.S. politicians...
Should they be doing what they're doing?
That's not a good poll question.
It's not a good poll question.
Because it's so... Should U.S. politicians spend their time... What's a... Help me out here. Anybody?
Well, they're saying no. They're just...
Okay. Should U.S. politicians spend their time focused... on Israel. I can't think of a better
focused
way.
Specifically, like I said, this is not about whether you like, you have the right to like Israel, but you should have the right not to.
I have friends in Israel. It's not about that.
It's not about liking Israelis, yes, clearly. Israelis.
Like, give me a break. It's about the United States of America literally having our politicians being bought and sold by another country. That's the point of it. So anyway, we just put up the poll. It's a poorly phrased question because you guys hung me out to dry on that one.
Sorry.
Should U.S. politicians spend their time focused on Israel? 91% of you say no so far. 9% say yes. So U.S. politicians should have their focus be on Israel. I don't understand that. Why did we elect them in the United States to focus on another country? But okay. Guess 9%. That's how the world works here. Anyway.
But why do you think that's in your best interest? Is it just because you like Zionism? That's valid. I really want Israel to succeed. And so I want my politicians to.
Yeah. Like, as an American, do you wake up in the morning, the first thing that you think about is Israel? Like, that's what you care most about. That's you. You know, you care
right.
more.
You
have every
that.
Right to do that. You're an American. You have every right to do that, right? It's a free country, freedom of speech. So yeah, let us know in the poll here what you think about that. All right. We've got more news to get to here on your Tuesday. We do indeed. We're going to talk about how if the FBI decided to go woke, well, could it go broke? Could it have fewer recruits?
No, because they're going to keep taking your tax dollars.
So the FBI can go as woke as possible, but now they actually get a new building built. That's how it works in Washington, D.C. Mike Johnson can funnel money to the FBI, and they're spying on Americans illegally. That's the way it works. We'll talk about that. Plus, Hamilton 68 exposed and the Russian disinformation campaign. And all of that. So we got that coming up here. So yeah, get on the poll right now. We got a lot of people. Thank you for your super chats, by the way. We got some very kind $50 super chats. Babies for matzo balls, peace for Palestine, Mike Glasso says. We've seen a lot of death and destruction over the past 24 hours in Rafah, and just awful, awful carnage there with these children being killed. So
I don't think anybody would watch this show and think, oh, they don't like Israelis or they don't like Russians or Ukrainians or whatever. It's not valid criticism. We speak for all civilians and all people.
It's about
world governments.
I got a nasty email from a Ukrainian yesterday, and he said, why do you hate my country? Why my homeland? Why do you hate my country? You want my country to die or to be destroyed. And I was like, do you not watch our show? It's the exact opposite of that. I don't want any Ukrainians to die. I don't want your country to die. But you are literally killing yourselves by partnering with the West and putting 600,000 Ukrainians to death. Do you not understand it? Like, I couldn't understand his email. He's like, why do you hate Ukraine? I don't hate Ukraine. I want it to do better. I want it to survive, and I want Ukrainians to live. It's the most corrupt country in the world, and I'd like it to not be. I'd like for men to not be conscripted and thrown into trucks and driven to the front lines to die. Maybe you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
So wake up.
And this is something as a journalist that really upsets me. It doesn't matter what I like. It doesn't matter at all. Yeah. We're not covering things that we like. We hate everything that we cover because it's all war. So what we like should be left out of this completely, that we are trying to find information that is valid and true. And that's it.
Like someone in the chat just asked about Marty says, Marty, thank you for your kind words. He says, not once have I seen any serious bigotry from Redacted. Thank you for that, Marty.
Thank you.
I appreciate
that. I think that when someone says this triggers me as a journalist, like, oh, you just don't like Israel, then you're accusing me of a bias that just going towards things that I like. And it's just not the way that, you know, I take my journalism more seriously than that. So,
yeah. And someone in the chat just said, can you update us on Maui, on the Maui fires? And no, I can't. We haven't covered that story in a few weeks. The last update we brought you, we covered, and you can seek that video out from a few weeks ago with the most recent update. I can tell you that the Maui residents have received no more money from the Biden administration in order to help them. But we are fine. Again, this comes back to, we are fine sending $61 billion to Ukraine and tens of billions of dollars to Israel so they can carry out a genocide in Rafah. If you're okay with that, remember the people of Maui who were given, what, $700. So that's what we're talking about. That's what that last segment was about.
We sent tens of billions to Israel, but we sent tens of thousands to Hawaii. I mean,
hundreds.
Yeah, we sent $1,000 to Hawaii. Oh, my gosh. Well, I don't know if you saw last week, the Fed basically just threw up their hands. They are not going to be cutting interest rates anytime soon. We are not having interest rates cutting anytime soon. And that means that we are going to continue with inflation at this level, and we are going to continue with these interest rates at this level. That means that we could maybe see an interest rate cut by the end of the year, but the Fed is basically saying, hey, we're going to continue printing money. It's an election year. So the value of the U.S. dollar continues to decline, and this is a debt bomb waiting to explode right now, which is why we are, and you're seeing gold and silver skyrocketing right now. Gold, all-time highs. There's a reason for that. There's an incredible lack of supply of gold right now. We don't have enough of it, and mining companies are trying as much as they can to start mining gold as quickly as they can. They don't have enough of it. And central banks now are moving fully away from the U.S. dollar, more towards a gold-backed currency. Look at the BRICS meeting that's about to happen in Moscow next week. It is going to be a game changer, and we are going to see a major shift. China's flying in. You're going to see BRICS nations, and they're going to be solidifying their support around moving away from the U.S. dollar. Where are they moving? They're more moving towards a commodity-backed currency in the BRICS currency, again, away from the U.S. dollar. Gold, gold, gold. And that's why our friends over at Lear Capital can actually help you get set up buying precious metals sent right to your front door. You can store it in your gun safe if you want. Gold coins, silver coins, it's totally up to you. Or it can be stored off-site, a 24-hour protected security facility. Of course, you can have your gold and silver stored off-site, your precious metals. It's totally up to you how you want to do that. I will tell you, when you have it stored off-site, if you need to sell it really quickly, like you want it for a mortgage for a house, or you want to buy a car, or whatever you're going to do with it, usually it can happen in about 2 to 3 days, that transaction. So, but that's up to you. But you could also store it yourself, keep it in your house, and then take it to a broker and do it that way. Again, up to you. But they will take great care of you. They are a fantastic company in the United States. They are a group of patriots. They have thousands of five-star reviews. And right now, if you give their 1-800 number a call, just jump on the phone with them and tell them you heard about them on Redacted. Say, hey, Clayton sent you. Clayton and Natalie sent you. And just talk to them on the phone and get your free gold guide. They have a price target right now of $3,200 for an ounce of gold. And UBS is out with a new price target of $4,000 an ounce of gold. Right now, I think it's at $2,300. So almost double in price is where gold is heading, according to UBS. Anyway, go call their 800 number right now, 1-800-613-3557, to get your free guide, or go to learredacted.com. And when you do, you could receive up to $15,000 in free bonus metals with a qualified purchase. Again, 1-800-613-3557 for your free guide, or go to learredacted.com. RadioPublic.com.
The FBI is prioritizing race over qualifications for its hiring practices. That's what the House Judiciary Committee is looking into. They sent this letter to FBI Director Christopher Wray asking for documents related to their hiring practices because whistleblowers say they have been prioritizing diversity over qualified hires, and specifically, this is what they're doing. To more easily accommodate a larger pool of available applicants, FBI special agent hiring standards have been relaxed and requirements measurably lowered in categories that include physical fitness, illicit drug use, financial irregularities, mental health, full-time work experience, and integrity. You no longer have to have those things to work for the FBI.
Really raising your standards over the...
It's about time, because I don't want any of those qualities in an FBI agent. I want them to be, you know, like financially vulnerable, hopped up on whatever.
Oh, my God.
Right, it's obese. Basically
the shirt that won't fit. They're like, all right, come on, Agent Tubby. Let's get out there. We got to...
Drug use? I mean, let's just all look at that list a little bit longer. These things are A-okay.
The lack of integrity, why would you put that on that list?
I missed that. You don't have to have integrity to work at the FBI. Thank you, FBI. So now they've lowered their standard. Integrity. I missed that.
Physical fitness, can you run after victims? Nope.
Victims.
Okay. Or run after bad guys.
Well, you probably can't even run after victims.
You can't run after anybody.
This guy's dead. I can't even run after that guy. But I also love mental health.
Yeah.
They're going to lower their qualities for mental health too, which you don't want FBI agents to have high mental health.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
Are you crazy? Fat? Use drugs? Have bankruptcies? Lie a lot? Have experience? We
morally
want
questionable.
The FBI wants you.
Right. Okay. This is funny only because it's tragic, right? We have to laugh or else we'll just lose our minds. Whistleblowers have said this. And also they say that the FBI has fewer candidates than ever before. They say
I wonder
that.
Why?
Yeah. I mean, anybody,
can you imagine telling someone you work at the FBI? Like, can you imagine, like, at a dinner party? Like, what is Johnny doing now that he's graduated college? He works at the FBI. They'd be like, oh, God.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I mean, you know, there are a lot of respectable
people. Severe gambling problem?
Yeah.
wasn't he mentally handicapped as well? Little Johnny, he's now at the FBI.
Awesome. I mean, look, there are a lot of respectable people who work at the FBI who worked really hard to get those jobs because they had an ideal about catching bad guys. That's why we have so many whistleblowers, because they're horrified at what's happening to an organization that they respected. Otherwise, we wouldn't know this.
Yeah, look at Garrett O'Boyle, like an American patriot. I mean, look, you know, and these individuals who, Garrett O'Boyle, who, you know, quit the FBI and turned whistleblower once he saw, of course, what was happening at these different field offices targeting Catholics. You're going to go into, you know, church services like that's the Americans we're targeting now.
Yeah, this is on the list. Now, what they say is they have so few applicants and so they can't even be choosy anymore. Look at these numbers. They say that from the mid-90s until the early 2000s, the FBI had over 100,000 applications on file at any given time. And during that time, roughly 1,000 new agents, or 1% of those who were applied, graduated from the academy. So 1% completion rate of 100,000 people who wanted in at any given time. Now, they say, they have only an estimated 48,000 applications on file. What that pass-through rate is, who knows? It's probably a lot higher than 1% because they need them and they have no standards. You know, so they're asking now the FBI, have you lowered these standards in order to meet the president's diversity mandates or in order to meet historically low application numbers? The mandate that they speak of was put into place. It's this one on day one of the Biden administration, ordering all federal government agencies to ramp up the university in historically underserved communities. Now the Republican-led committee is saying that this has made us all less safe. with less qualified agents at the helm. This is from the letter from the Congress saying the FBI's hyperfixation on hitting Biden's DEI initiatives rather than qualifications that make the best federal law enforcement candidates and officers has created a climate within the FBI that puts the American public and American civil liberties at risk. And then see here, he lists examples, like you said, the Richmond office targeting Catholics, the pre-dawn raid on pro-life advocate Mark Huuk, and the FBI's nefarious role in ensuring the Hunter Biden laptop story was suppressed. Now that happened, though, that's not necessarily fair to blame that on Biden because it happened under Trump, the suppression of the Hunter Biden story in order to clearly get Biden elected. So, you know, this just shows that some natives are in charge at the FBI and were before the Biden administrator initiative. But given that there are so many whistleblowers now, it shows that most agents know that this is fundamentally wrong and they want their agency to return to a place of integrity. But for how long, right? How long can this continue until what? Like, play this out. What happens to the FBI if they continue to have such low qualified candidates?
Look no further than the U.S. military, which under George W. Bush, of course, lowered their standards during when no one wanted to sign up and go and die in Iraq under Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. So, and live and die in Afghanistan for 20 years. So what did George W. Bush do? He lowered the standards to get into the United States military. Of course, then it was exacerbated by President Barack Obama. We're going to allow, you know, trans individuals. We're going to keep those fitness standards as low as possible. George W. Bush famously lowered the mental standards so mentally ill individuals could join the U.S. military under George W. Bush. And now the FBI is hiring mentally ill agents. So look no further. What's happened to the United States military? Of course, recruitment has collapsed. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't last 10 days against a Russian army,
right,
or an Iranian army or a Chinese army right now. We are absolutely deficient from a readiness standpoint, as Colonel McGregor has outlined on our show. So I think look at the military to see that, right?
Yeah. Well, I'd like to give the last word on this one to Coleman Hughes, because recently I read his book, The End of Race Politics. Coleman Hughes, I'm showing you right there, I'll be honest, because he is a Black person saying these words. And we don't live in a colorblind society. So if a white man says this, we don't listen, or we call them a racist. But if a Black man says it, we listen. This is what he says about diversity. And I think it's funny. So I'm going to read a lot of it. But I know you don't like it when I just read you books, so I won't do that. But he talks about how we should reconceive diversity as neutral because it's neither good or bad. Are you laughing at me?
Because I'm laughing at you. Like, you said, I'm not going to... What did you say? I'm not going to read this whole book, but I'm going to read it. I'm going to read the whole thing.
I'm not going to read you the whole thing. Okay. I'm going to read you only the funnier parts.
Okay, good.
So I know that, like, Natalie's bringing her highlights from a book and it gets boring. So I'm going to try and make it not boring.
Okay.
All right. So he says, you know, we hear slogans like diversity is our strength. And he says that race is a meaningless trait that does not map neatly into anything that we should care about, that racial diversity in and of itself is neutral. He says we may rehearse these nice platitudes, but nobody really believes that Earth, Wind and Fire would have been better if they'd added a white musician, or that the Beatles were in desperate need of a Hispanic bandmate to round out their sound, or that when you go to your favorite Mexican restaurant, you think, wow, they really need a white person in the kitchen. Clearly, he says racial diversity isn't good or bad. And for example, it's great that the NYPD is racially diverse because it reflects its society. But does that mean that government should impose racial diversity in police forces by standards? No, we want police forces that maintain race-neutral standards of entry and are racially diverse. But insofar that there is an inherent trade-off between these two goals, and there very well could be in some cases, it could make sense to compromise on the former. And so when you compare police jobs to, say, firefighting, here the goal is to get the best for the job. It doesn't matter, right? A firefighter, if they're white, Black, Hispanic, or Asian, and the job doesn't depend on public perception of being a balanced force. So he says, I would argue that the colorblind merit should reign supreme and that the most jobs and spaces in society are more like firefighting than policing. We should generally want the best people for the job. And in most cases, the ability to do the job doesn't depend on public perception. So let's ask ourselves this question about the FBI. If it's too white, do we think that they don't function? If it's too male, if it's too fit, if the personnel body of like the group of people who take on FBI jobs, does it depend on public perception of their makeup, of their diversity, or should we just want the most qualified people? So has it turned out indeed that the FBI has gone astray? Do you think the Beatles needed a Hispanic band member? What do you think? Is diversity neutral or is it good? Let us know.
Instead of a drummer, instead of Ringo Starr, Julio Sanchez.
Yeah.
On the drums.
Or, I don't know.
John Paul George and Julio.
And Joao.
And Julio down by the schoolyard.
Right.
Let us know in the comments below.
We won't get anything from this, right? Christopher Wray may or may not submit those documents to the House committee. They probably will have a hearing. They'll film themselves grilling Christopher Wray. Maybe he'll make some changes or say that he'll make some changes, but they won't because the House Judiciary Committee has no real power of legislation to make it stop. So this will mostly be grandstanding that we'll see politicians use in their fundraising emails and their X feeds, but we should at least watch it because it's wild.
It is wild. It's wild. Let us know in the comments below what you think about this. Danny T says, despite the sorrow of the day of today, Redacted informs us better and about Natalie can find a reason for a smile, appearing moments that make the day survivable. Thank you, Danny. Pono 888 says, Natalie, I bet if you just made a channel of you reading books, lots of people would subscribe.
Oh, thanks. See, I'm coming with
my books. Idea.
That's what I do.
Natalie's book corner. Well, she'll just sit and she'll just put, there'll be like a fireplace and a cat. Mm-hmm. And you'll just like pet a cat with a book and you'll be like, welcome, everybody. It'd be like an ASMR channel. Welcome
to Natalie's book channel. I'm allergic to cats. You know this.
Today, we are going to read for 10 hours. Just buckle up, everyone, and grab a cup of tea.
It'd be like the, have you ever seen the Nick Offerman drinking scotch around Christmas time?
Yeah,
like this, like it's just 4 hours of he doesn't say a damn thing. He's just sitting there like with a glass of scotch and he's just like just sitting in a room and just drinking his scotch. It's the best.
Our kids, they once tried to do drawing videos like they do kids drawing videos on YouTube, but we didn't have a camera going down at their drawings. So they're like, okay, we're going to teach you to draw dolphins today. And then the whole video was like this. Therefore,
yeah, you couldn't. Yeah, there was nothing. Was there, they didn't like have that. Any shots of the pictures. It was just their foreheads.
It was like 4 minutes.
They're like, isn't our pictures good? Like, well, we can't see them at all. But okay.
They're like, look at our great drawing video. We're gonna be famous on YouTube.
Hey, Zebra, thank you so much. Yeah, we try not to be predictable.
My daughter does a bunch of TikToks of her because she's a digital artist. Sorry, but like she's a digital artist, and so she does her little TikToks of her actually showing like the drawings and stuff. It's pretty good.
Oh, that's much better. She'll have to teach our kids how to do it.
So, Zebra, we try to cover, you know, like four or five of the big stories of the day, and the biggest stories right now clearly are what's happening in Rafah and in the Middle East right now as the United States gets dragged into this, and are we going to see thousands of people slaughtered? So, that's one of the biggest stories of the day. We're also going to talk about Russian disinformation today. This is a story that no one else is covering, but we will cover it here on the show. Hopefully that's not too predictable for you, Zebra. We're going to talk about Hamilton 68. If you don't know what Hamilton 68 is, then you can educate yourself in this next segment, because we are going to interview Paul Thacker, who's an investigative journalist, one of the best in the world, and he has uncovered through his connections with the whistleblower more information about the lengths to which these companies were releasing disinformation to try to discredit the American election, to try to get Joe Biden elected, and how all of that played out. And so we're going to fill in some blanks here. This is part of this new knowledge piece where this company, of course, was pushing this disinformation out there. So hopefully you will stick around for that. Paul is up next. We're going to talk to him in just a second. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at American Financing, because despite everything the Fed has been trying right now, we are still feeling the effects of inflation. Filling up your car, grocery shopping, home repairs, everything is more expensive right now. And most of you are paying these bills with a credit card. Credit card debt has skyrocketed, $1.3 trillion right now in American credit card debt. If you're a homeowner, there is a way out of this. You need to call my friends at American Financing. They can put together a plan to pay off that high interest credit card debt and create meaningful savings for you every month. They are saving people just like you an average of $854 a month and closing in as fast as 10 days. That's right. So don't wait. Get yourself into a better position. Call their salary-based mortgage consultants today. It costs nothing to get started. And if you start today, you could delay two mortgage payments on your house, giving you greater savings up front. American Financing can help get that monkey off your back. Here's their phone number, 866-890-8434. Write that down, guys, if you have a pen and paper, 866-890-8434. Call them today or visit AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. That's the number. See, that's the URL. You have to go to that one for them to know and make sure that they'll take care of you from Redacted. So AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. Well, the subversion of democracy is alive and well in the United States. And look no further than the Hamilton 68 dashboard, which helped create dozens of fake stories in major media outlets to sway American elections. It accused conservatives, of course, of trafficking in Russian disinformation. All of that has been largely debunked now. And Biden, of course, is now president of the United States. Or somebody is president of the United States. Biden is there, but somebody's clearly running the United States. So did it actually work? Well, now a whistleblower has come forward to detail her employer's role in helping to create disinformation that could be uploaded and spread on this Hamilton 68 dashboard. Our next guest broke this story and spoke to this whistleblower. Paul Thacker wrote a deep dive story on his Substack about this, which we'll have linked up below. And investigative journalist Paul Thacker joins us now for the first time on Redacted. Paul, great to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I think maybe first, before we get into Betsy, which is the whistleblower you spoke to, maybe it would be instructive for our audience if you could explain a little bit about how Hamilton 68 as this dashboard, what did it actually do? How did it function?
So I didn't follow the stories when they came out in, like, you know, 2015, 2016. I first learned about Hamilton 68 when Matt Taibbi wrote about it. He wrote about it because he'd gone to Twitter like me. He had some internal documents where people at Twitter were saying that this Hamilton 68, which was supposedly tracking Russian disinformation, was total nonsense. The algorithm didn't actually function. It was actually calling Americans, you know, Russian bots when they were just normal Americans expressing things on Twitter. And so he uncovered that whole issue through these internal Twitter emails with Joel Roth, who was at Twitter at the time, dismissing Hamilton 68. And then what the fallout of that actually was, of course, is a lot of people denied that they had done what they had done. And then also the Washington Post put out a press release that they had made corrections to around 8 or 9 stories that either referenced or used data from Hamilton 68. So the whole thing was complete nonsense created by a bunch of sort of, you know, lefty aligned, DNC aligned nonprofits.
And then when we started to, when this thing started to explode and we started to realize how this was all put together, there were, of course, a bunch of different organizations sort of feeding this Hamilton 68 dashboard with sort of fake information. So you spoke to a whistleblower named Betsy, a former New Knowledge employee who worked on Hamilton 68. First of all, why did she decide to come and speak out? And then maybe you can talk about her role at New Knowledge and what she discovered.
Well, what happened to her was when she took a job at New Knowledge, she knew that they were doing this, you know, disinformation stuff. It's not something she knew about. She worked on, like, what's called, like, front end of software programs. So there's back end people who do a lot of the really difficult algorithm stuff. And there's people who do, like, the front end, which is the, you know, the part where people like you and I interact with the software. Right. So, like, that you and I can use software to do different things for us. She's a front end designer. And this thing, Hamilton 68, had been created by people at New Knowledge, a guy named Jonathan Morgan, and they had gotten 12 months of funding from the Center for American Progress to update it, make it nicer, that they could then sell out as a product to other people. And that was her job, to create this front end and make it nicer. She eventually left New Knowledge because they began to engage in disinformation, something which they had told her they were never going to do. And then she put it all together, like, years later. She didn't realize at the time it was happening while she was working there. And then she put it all together later when these articles came out in the New York Times, you know, in the Post about what New Knowledge was doing, which is they had engaged in a disinformation campaign in an Alabama Senate election.
Can you walk us through what exactly they were putting out, what fake information they were putting out, this disinformation?
Sure. So New Knowledge had been paid for, and it's always very unclear. It's always very gray, of course, because this is disinformation. So it's designed to disinform you. And the people who are experts in it, you know, that's what they do, is they create disinformation. But what had happened in Alabama is New Knowledge and these other groups had worked together to create Russian bots that began to track a guy running for Senate in Alabama. And then that created a storyline that, aha, he is part of a Putin-Russian disinformation campaign. But he never was. It was actually created by Democratic Party operatives.
Fascinating. How does this tie together with what John Podesta was doing, of course, and trying to distract, I think, most Americans from the Hillary Clinton email servers, right? And then we get this Steele dossier. We get, of course, this massive push to try to discredit Donald Trump, his connection to Vladimir Putin, Russian disinformation. John Podesta, the Steele dossier. How is all of that connected?
Well, I think it's connected in that we know that, you know, Center for American Progress, they're a left of center think tank, lobby shop. They ran Hillary Clinton's campaign. They then, you know, helped to put together and push out the Steele dossier. And when Betsy DePuy was working on upgrading the Hamilton 68 project, that was being paid for by Center for American Progress. They got 12 months of funding with it. It involved a guy from Think Progress, which was the news site at Center for American Progress, someone at the German Marshall Fund, a guy who'd worked with Brookings. So all these kind of, you know, left of center aligned groups, they were all using this idea of Russian disinformation, right, to tag and target people they didn't like, you know, mostly Republicans. I asked her specifically, do they go after Bernie Sanders peoples, you know, because that was also, you know, that's a theme also now, is that, you know, if you don't support right now, if you don't support more funding for Ukraine, then you're Russian disinformation, whether you're left or right, right?
Right.
So it's basically, I think the people in power, what I like to explain it is, it's DNC-aligned, left-of-center corporate Democrats. And if you stray to the left, if you stray to the right, they're going to come after you and call you Russian disinformation. So there's this idea out there that it's conservatives being attacked, but that's not true. It's everybody that's being attacked. Anyone who's not aligned themselves with the Democratic Party, you know, the Biden administration, they're going to be called Russian disinformation.
And can you give a few examples of things that obviously started floating around as a direct result of perhaps her time at New Knowledge? I know you said it's sort of a gray area, but when we talk about Hamilton 68 and sort of the flood of fake posts that were showing up, whether it was on Facebook or Twitter or even just suppressing other information, what sort of pieces of information were sort of being used and pushed out there to discredit and discredit conservatives?
Well, what Hamilton 68 was being used for, it was being used as a venue for reporters to come along and say, hey, here's this independent group that's tracking Russian disinformation. Here's what they found. And then you see stories start to appear. So like I said, you know, there were several stories that have been corrected now in the Washington Post. I noticed when Matt first came out with his story about Hamilton 68 last year, there were a ton of them that appeared in Mother Jones. Some of them were on national TV. Jonathan Morgan went on CBS News, the guy who ran New Knowledge, to talk about Russian disinformation. So it wasn't just like on social media. This stuff was used to create sort of facts that you could then use to roll into news stories that would come out and then target Republicans or anyone who the Democratic Party didn't like.
What was the connection with the three-letter agencies, the FBI, the CIA, in this Hamilton 68 dashboard?
Well, I'm not sure if there was any directly there that we know of exactly. You know, it's kind of one step removed. So a lot of people who put it together are at this, you know, thing called the German Marshall Fund, which takes, you know, State Department funding and other groups. But while the final straw for Betsy DePuy when she was at New Knowledge was they started off, she had thought it was originally going to be for like corporations. So corporations are being attacked. We're going to sense these disinformation campaigns to attack your products or your brand, and we're going to help you deal with that. So what she found out, though, is the company began to hire a bunch of NSA people.
sort of like review bombing, right? Like if a competitor was going to go up and like review bomb their competitor, this would, they would sort of help protect you from that, like terrible Amazon reviews and stuff like that. What, that sounds pretty noble, right? That's good.
Activist groups, you know, whoever it might be, whether right or wrong. But what she found out was that the company started to change. They took on a co-founder who'd come from the NSA. And then they began hiring a bunch of NSA people. And by the time she had left, I think there'd been something like 11 former NSA people who joined New Knowledge. And then they got a grant from the Department of Defense to create automated disinformation for elections. And these, this automated disinformation, they'd already tested it in Alabama and it had been successful. And so now they got a grant from the Department of Defense to do automated disinformation. And she said it was targeted at American elections. And that to her was too much. I asked her at the time, I was like, if I was at a company and they were getting grants or a contract to do election disinformation, the first thing I'd be doing is calling a friend of mine who knows election law. I'm like, are we breaking the law? Like, what's going on here? She didn't really understand those things. She was just very concerned about like what her job was doing. They had offered her equity stake in the company, and she was looking at what the company was doing, and she was saying, we're going to destroy our reputation. And that's, of course, what happened. New Knowledge is gone. It became Yonder, became bought by another company. All these, you know, companies move around. They change names.
So that's what I was going to get you out of here on this question, Paul, which is, you know, is New Knowledge still there? Are there pieces of it that still exist? And is Hamilton 68, this dashboard, still up and operational in some capacity? I find it very hard to believe that these things disappear into the ether and then they're done. We're going to look back on this 20 years from now. Can you believe what they did in the 2020 election? Good thing we've totally changed in the United States. Is this stuff still working?
Oh, it's still out there. The Post reporter who covered this, he went on NPR and I saw his interview and it was great what he said. He's like, the only thing I know what happened with this whole entire, you know, election disinformation campaign that New Knowledge ran in Alabama is that everyone denies what they did. No one seems to know that they were involved. The one person I think that's most interesting out of all of this is Renee DiResta. She went from New Knowledge. She's now an academic at Stanford. She's considered a disinformation scholar at Stanford University. She was involved in the Project Alabama, Project Birmingham in Alabama, the election disinformation campaign. And she's now quoted regularly in, you know, in the Washington Post and the New York Times as an expert on disinformation. So it's not harmed her career. She's moved up.
That's how you get promoted. I mean, this is the same thing. Yeah. I mean, Nina Jankowicz, you know, you fall on your feet and you get elevated and you get promoted in these positions. Right. It's unbelievable. You get impeached. You get promoted in the United States. I said I was going to get you out of here a second ago, but I'm curious now. It seems like this strategy has morphed less so maybe about disinformation, maybe more now about censorship in a way. I mean, we're certainly seeing the big tech company collusion, of course, with the government. We're seeing, you know, YouTube coming out, revising their policies a few weeks ago to talk specifically about the 2024 campaign. They're going to be targeting and downranking content, which doesn't come from places like CNN or MSNBC or Fox News. And they're going to really removing independent media, independent journalists and stuff like that. So it seems like, has this morphed into more of a censorship industrial complex than a disinformation industrial complex?
Whenever I see academic disinformation researcher, I call that censorship research. It's all about providing a sort of patina of academic gloss to provide cover for government agencies or big tech companies to censor us. And what you said exactly, this is the one thing we haven't even talked about very much. We haven't cracked it all. How are people getting ranked on Google? I can tell you right now, all the Substacks out there, they're not even like cataloged on Google. I don't even know your show, but I know your show is going to be hard to find on Google. Anyone who is not at one of the big companies that's willing to line up behind the Democratic Party, they're going to find that you can't find their information, their show, or anything that they have on Google. And that's one of the biggest things I think they're doing, is they're trying to control what we find when we go looking for information.
Well, we certainly have heard from the United Nations and the World Economic Forum about owning Google search results and being able to suppress and push down information further in the algorithm. So this doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah, good luck trying to find our show. I mean, Paul, just to be clear, they unsubscribe people from our show on YouTube, and we have 2.3 million viewers that watch our show. And people routinely every month tell us that YouTube unsubscribes them from our channel. Right. Like, they didn't choose to be unsubscribed. YouTube takes it upon themselves to tell you, you shouldn't be watching this. And then they will recommend CNN videos in its place. It'll show up in the right sidebar as CNN videos for them to watch. So
I mean, every time I see someone now on Twitter talking about how their YouTube got taken down or their show has been whatever, I'm like, my first response is, why are you even trying to be on YouTube anymore?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I just to let you know, for my newsletter, right? I mean, I'm an award-winning journalist, investigative journalist. I cannot have an Instagram for my newsletter. I had a volunteer who wanted to create an Instagram. It was just like, you know, here's the next title, here's whatever. Instagram kept taking it down, and finally couldn't have Instagram anymore. There's certain sites, YouTube, Instagram, LinkedIn. It's like, don't even bother.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we're on Rumble, of course. We're on X as well. We simulcast on all those platforms. And, you know, there'll be times when, hey, we tell people, all right, the next story, we cannot do this on YouTube. So good night, YouTube audience. We're going to move over to Rumble, and we're going to tell you what happened with COVID. You know, so it's unbelievable, the censorship industrial complex. Well, we will have your Substack linked up for people to read and read all of this deep dive on this whistleblower story about New Knowledge, the cybersecurity firm that created disinformation in the American election. And subscribe and check out Paul's amazing Substack as well. Paul, great to see you. Thank you so much for your insight and your great journalism.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Wow, thank you, Paul. That is unbelievable. You should read some of Paul's great journalism on his Substack. I mean, he's broken some amazing stories. So we need more investigative journalists like Paul out there doing this work. So thank you to Paul, and thanks to all of you for joining us tonight here on the show. We really, really appreciate it. Please subscribe to our newsletter. We have a daily newsletter. If you just go over to redacted.inc, it's not .com, it's .inc. Put in your email, and then you have to click submit, and then you will receive a welcome email from me, which is clayton@redacted.inc. That's my email. You can shoot me an email and say hello. And then you just need to confirm that you want to receive the newsletter. So that's all you need to do. You'll receive a welcome email. Now, what'll happen is a lot of times the newsletter will wind up in your spam folder. Before you subscribe, like, you might get an email from me and might wind up in your junk folder. Gmail has labeled our newsletter as dangerous, so it might wind up in your dangerous folder. You'll see a little tag from Google that says, we've identified this as dangerous. They don't want you to have accurate information about the world. Anyway, so just drag it over to your inbox and say, yes, I would like to see this every day. I'll put it in my inbox, drag it over there, and then you shouldn't have any problems going forward, we hope. Anyway, so thanks for subscribing to the newsletter. It'll be published tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. Eastern time. So thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight here on this Tuesday. Have a great night. We'll see you back here tomorrow.